Chapter 2, Aram and Arya. Residing at the beginning of a dark hour, seven gods created the world. It was not the one as we know it today, there was nothing there at first but water and the lands that populate our species so abundantly today. When the creators noticed that the new world appeared colorless and lifeless, they got bored and decided to populate it with many different creatures. In doing so, they gave free rein to their ideas, thus, the young nature quickly developed a multitude of life forms. Each species was equipped with its own unique abilities. The gods enjoyed watching the battles they fought to be superior to the other races and to ensure the survival of their own. Millions and millions of species inhabited the planet Alpha Vol, and similar to the animals on Gaja, the home of humans, there were mammals, birds, reptiles, amphibians, fish and some more. As on Gaja, the mammals were not capable of any complex language. The many species did not understand each other either, and so they were caught in an ever-recurring competition for dominance on Alpha Vol. Some of them eventually died out, but their gods were not concerned about that. They were amused when one species conquered and exterminated another with the help of instincts. Without this being simply a matter of killing for hunger, they slaughtered each other. But one of the gods soon did not like what he was jointly responsible for and decided to put an end to it. One wanted to create a better planet than Gaja had become. On it there were now, thanks to the humans, no other animals except themselves. The new creation was to be spared this fate, and so the insightful god gave the animals the ability to talk to each other. Every species that existed on Alpha Vol was to be able to learn and expand its own language. Thus, it could retain its individuality, but would be required to communicate with other species and expand its mind through learning. What their brother did, the other six gods did not like at all, whereupon they decided to banish the adversary. He would live on Alpha Vol as the only humanoid, as a human being, naked, blind and mute. They would take away his divine abilities, except for the power of immortality. Their relative was not to age lonely and forlorn and eventually perish, but to fight a barbaric battle for survival for all eternity. They took away his speech and his sight, and as punishment for his arbitrary, unchangeable deeds, however, he should be able to hear all sounds surrounding him, as well as the vituperative words of his former brothers, the gods. The renegade lay naked and silent in a meadow, and now he would be killed and eaten by some animals. For the first time he felt the cool breeze on his skin, which he now possessed. It tingled and he got goosebumps on his arms. He trembled and tried to scream, but no sound was heard. The human sat up and the grass swayed, but he saw nothing of it, only heard it. Where he was now, he could only feel with his hands. "To you I swear vengeance," he thought to himself, and remained sitting still and motionless, listening in the grass, ready to die whenever the others would let him. After some time, he heard something approaching and reached out for it. The tall grass right in front of him rustled and he was very scared. Never before had he perceived sounds like this, and his breathing became faster and faster as his heart seemed to pound all the way to his throat. Suddenly he felt soft, long fur on his palm. A warm breath hit him and a sniff was heard. When the man already thought his end had come, a good-natured sounding female voice suddenly rang out, "Do not be afraid. Please, help me, whoever you are. Please don't eat me," the former god thought to himself. He would have liked to say something, but try as he might, his mouth opened, but nothing came out. "I am Arya, a she-wolf. You must be the one who gave our people their voices. I want to thank you for that. Your brothers have punished you very harshly for that. Poor friend, let me help you and please don't be afraid of me. I won't hurt you." The she-wolf gently licked the hand of the man, who began to cry, first silently, then suddenly with sobs, which became louder and louder. He was frightened and trembled, but understood that it was possible for him to speak again. "Thank you, thank you." He whimpered with joy and couldn't stop crying, he was so happy about it. For the first time, he heard his own voice and his joy at this was hard to contain. "You're welcome," Arya spoke softly, promising to stay with him to watch over him so that no other animal could harm him. "Go to sleep," she said, "I'll warm your nearly hairless body so you can make it through the night. It will get very cold later." "I thank you, Arya," the man whispered and lay curled up on his side, for he suddenly became very tired. The she-wolf was much larger than the outcast and had no trouble enclosing his body with hers. Thus, the human was protected by her warm, silvery fur, and Arya stayed awake all night. She soon noticed that he was having bad dreams, moving violently and seeming to struggle. The she-wolf gently licked his blonde hair and soothed him. When the man woke up, the good-natured Arya seemed to have disappeared. Desperately he groped for her and became very restless. "Arya! Arya, where are you?" he shouted and became afraid. "I'm here," sounded the voice he knew. Quickly, his protector ran to him and nuzzled her powerful head against his hand so that he could feel it. "I thought you had left me," the human said. "No," Arya whispered, "I'm not leaving you. I've brought you something to eat."
"What is it?"
"Let's just say it's a good thing you can't see it. Got it messed up badly," she then grinned. "You are so good to me. Do I deserve this?" The man then asked her and began to eat the raw meat. It was warm, slippery and tasted strange, but the former god had never felt the agonizing sensation of hunger before and was glad that this promised relief. "Now that you've given us the language, we can finally talk to each other instead of fighting pointlessly because no one understands the other. Surely you two deserve to be treated well. Your brothers don't seem to understand that love and forgiveness are due to all." A small pause arose, during which Arya also ate something. She occasionally tore a piece of meat into smaller pieces and laid them down in front of her friend, who could then track them down with his hands. "You were one of them. It must be awful with all the new impressions and sensations. Do you have names, too?"
"I don't even know my new friend's name."
"Oh, forgive me," the human began, "I am Ephraim. And yes, it is very strange. Never before have I been afraid, felt cold or warmth, or felt hunger. But again, thank you for helping me."
"Ah, Ephraim," Arya said softly, "I'm glad to meet you.
I'll be glad to help you. You'll get used to everything here. I'm sure you will." Then, after a while, she suggested that he let her carry him on her back to a river to drink. He agreed and climbed groping on the she-wolf. Her fur was very soft and the man noticed that she must be a very strong she-wolf. He felt every single muscle. Arya brought her companion to the bank of a river, into which he immediately plunged, bathing and drinking at the same time, while she watched him and smiled. Back on the shore, Ephraim regretted that it was not possible for him to see Arya and his new home. "I would have loved to see with my own eyes all the colors and lights we once created. At least now I can speak again."
"How did you do that?"
he wanted to know. "Every being carries a divine spark within them, and some of us learn to use it and do good with it. Unfortunately, there are fewer and fewer who know how to use their gifts," she explained, then suddenly raised her head and sniffed intently in the wind.
"Is there something? What's wrong?" asked Ephraim, who heard the sound of her breathing.
"Ephraim," the she-wolf said, her voice sounding joyful, "we have company." But the human feared bad things. "Don't tell me someone is coming to eat me."
"Oh, nonsense," laughed Arya, "Aram the fox is on his way here. Maybe he can help us find a place for you to stay."
She glanced briefly at the naked human's penis, then said with a sneer, "Besides, maybe you should wrap your bare skin."
"Yes," he then said, "I don't have such a soft pelt like you."
A few moments later, Aram came and sat in front of the two. He was a handsome male fox and a little taller than Arya. He had long, golden fur that reflected the sun. Ephraim could not see the two proud animals, but he could hear a deep, masculine voice.
"Hello, Arya, hello, primate," Aram said, eyeing the man for a moment.
"I am Ephraim. Pleased to meet you, Aram the fox."
"Hello, Aram," the she-wolf rejoiced, "this is Ephraim. He's the outcast they tell you about. I thought you might be able to help him. He doesn't know where to stay yet, and needs shelter from the cold nights."
"Yes, I can see that," said the fox, "and he's blind to boot. But I think something can be done. It would be a laugh if we couldn't cheat the deities. We'll see."
Aram thought for a moment and then said, "Come closer, Ephraim."
The human took a step forward and anxiously asked, "What are you going to do?"
"Shh, let him help," cautioned Arya.
"I will give you a kiss, Ephraim," the fox said.
"What?"
the man asked incredulously. But before he could react, Aram gave him a heartfelt kiss and pushed his tongue into Ephraim's mouth. The male closed his eyes and it made on Arya the impression as if he enjoyed what he was doing. Ephraim, who was completely overwhelmed,
could not resist it, for his body froze as he heard Aram's voice in his mind, "This is the kiss that will make you see." Then the fox suddenly let go of him and Ephraim fell to the ground. "What happened?" asked Daria, visibly concerned for her friend. "Don't worry. I'm sure it was a little uncomfortable for him, but it had to be done." Quickly the man got up again and was beside himself. "What was that? You cursed, stinking. Oh, I can see." Ephraim looked at his hands from both sides, looked up and turned his head. Suddenly he could see the many colors of the world through human eyes. The former god opened his mouth to admire the green leaves swaying in the wind and pink blossoms of the trees, from which hung fruit similar to the peaches on Gaja. He realized how colorful this world was shining, and it was much nicer to see it like this than from the distance he was in before. Only now did he also notice the fragrance that the flowers and green grass gave off, and was overwhelmed by the beauty of the planet that he too had once helped to create. I had no idea how beautiful he was. He marveled, looking into Aram's eyes. "Thank you so much, good fox. Thank you so much. I apologize for what I was about to say. Please forgive me." The appearance of the two animals pleased the man greatly, and he admitted, "I also had no idea what beauties we once created. How could we have been so stupid as to let you fight each other? What were we thinking? You are beautiful. Yeah, it's okay, no problem," the male appeased. "I'm glad if I could help you. But now let's figure out how to find you a permanent place to stay." "For now, he could stay with us," Arya suggested. "With us?" asked Ephraim in amazement. "Yes, with us," the fox then began. "You should know that Arya and I are a couple. I know it's unusual." Then he looked at the she-wolf with a smile and she added, "But it was love at first sight." "Yes, I understand. You are both very beautiful animals, too," the human praised. "I am sorry that we gods treated you this way and ignored you. I wish I could undo that." "Don't be sorry about that. If things had gone differently, Aram and I might never have met, because we wouldn't have been able to understand each other," Arya said. "I will make up for part of it by giving you freedom before the gods," the human exclaimed, raising his hand, and a small glow appeared in his body. The glow split in two, and one half flew to each of the animals until the light suddenly disappeared into Aram and Arya's fur. "What was that?" the silver she-wolf asked, irritated. "This," Ephraim began, "is the freedom to do anything you want without the gods having any influence over you. They now have no power over you at all. I have given up my attribute of being a god and given it to you." "What a great gift. We can't possibly accept it," Arya said. "You can. And I believe that this will be useful to you one day," Ephraim replied. "But I thought they took away your divine powers?" "Not all of them," the human spoke. "Be that as it may. Thank you, Ephraim. Whatever this gift may mean. Now, however, let us go to our home. It will be almost dark by the time we get there," Aram reminded. "Besides, you should get something like a coat. We can't cuddle with you all night," he ordered Ephraim. "After all, I have a vixen to cuddle with." Ephraim agreed with a smile, "You're right. I'll find a scrap of fur from a carrion." On her way, Arya killed a small boar and skinned it with her fangs. "I sure hope that's not fox fur," Aram joked as she rejoined the other two. "No, that's wild boar. I hope that's all right, Ephraim." With a nod, the man acknowledged, and Aram wondered about what had happened before. "Ephraim, your gift to us. I see you have kept some of your abilities. Then why didn't you make yourself able to see and speak?" "Well," the man explained, becoming visibly sad, "I didn't retain many abilities. I obviously could not heal myself. I can only control the light inherent in me, the spark of the gods. By transferring parts of the soul to both of you, I am now mortal and will perish alone as the first and last man on this planet."
"Why do you say that?" the she-wolf wanted to know when they were almost at their destination. "You have found new friends. Granted, you can't multiply with us, but we will be by your side and always there for you whenever you need us," Aram vowed.
"Thank you very much. I am glad to have found friends like you. Now I have a feeling that can hardly be described. Security probably sums it up best." After a while, it had already become dark, they arrived at the den of the two animals, which was a stone cave. The male stated, "This is where we live.
This is our home.
Small but mighty, Arya agreed. They went inside and while the wolf and fox lay down, the human sat down with them. Then he made a hand gesture above the ground and a kind of luminous sphere appeared, hovering above the earth and enveloping the whole den in a warm light.
This is beautiful, Arya rejoiced.
Yes, very romantic, agreed her boyfriend.
The bright play of light irradiated the stone walls of the cave so that the rock glittered.
Aram and Arya looked at each other very satisfied and in love.
Their friend noticed this and pretended to be tired, to let the animals be for themselves, after all, he did not want to be a burden.
Sweet dreams, Ephraim. When we go to sleep, we'll come to you, murmured the she-wolf.
Don't worry. I'm dreaming about my new friends in a new world.
Thank you for saving me.
I will never forget you.
I promise you that.
Sleep well?
Ephraim lay down a little apart, while Aram and Arya talked about how sad it must be for the poor human to be the only one of his kind to have to live in an environment that was completely new to him. After all, Ephraim had only the two of them. But they hoped that the other gods would eventually show mercy and take him back in.
Do you know how much I love you, my darling?
Asked Aram his girlfriend after a while.
Yeah, I guess, kind of like I do you.
And much more.
They began by kissing each other tenderly and Ephraim, who had turned his back on them to sleep, listened quietly.
Too bad you don't like to give me puppies, Aram regretted.
We just have to keep trying.
I, for one, will never give up, Arya vowed.
Ephraim thought about it, unfortunately, they didn't seem to know that they would never have puppies, because, after all, Aram was a fox and Arya was a wolf. A crossing of two species among themselves had never been foreseen by their creators.
Suddenly an idea came to the former god, which he wanted to keep to himself for the time being.
He still thought a little and listened inevitably to the fact that the two animals caressed each other again and again and finally mated with each other. When they experienced their unmistakable climax, Ephraim fell asleep and the animals cuddled together for quite a while. The next morning the man woke up, turned around and watched the fox and the she-wolf for a while. They had laid very close to each other and it seemed almost human how intimately they loved each other despite all appearances. They seemed like intertwined silver and gold, like a unity, something inseparable.
First, Aram woke up and winked at Ephraim.
Hello, Ephraim, he said softly.
Good morning, Aram.
I hope you slept well, yawned the fox, slowly stretching his limbs.
Yes, I did, after you made love.
The male looked surprised and said, embarrassed,
oh, I'm sorry.
I didn't mean for you to notice.
Well, why not?
It's quite natural and therefore all right. But I have to tell you that your wife can't get puppies from you in the normal way.
What, how would you know?
Startled Aram.
Well, she is a wolf, you are a fox.
We gods had determined that this should not be possible, so as not to mix the races.
Nature is colorful enough.
After all, nothing should degenerate, if you know what I mean.
Aram sadly confirmed, I understand.
He looked at Arya and had tears in his eyes when Ephraim suddenly revealed his idea to him. He intended to give her the opportunity to have puppies, even though Aram and she belonged to different species.
I will use part of my light to make an exception, I am giving you puppies.
You have been so good and kind to me that I cannot help but violate certain laws.
The fox's face brightened again when he heard about it.
That would be the greatest gift you could give us.
But haven't you given us far too much already?
He asked, as the human motioned for him to be quiet.
Ephraim closed his right hand and then said, This is my seed, which I will give to your Arya.
A glow shone in his fist and he went to her, looking at the sleeping she-wolf.
She is beautiful, strong and wise, he said.
Yes, she is, agreed Aram, watching the human touching Arya's womanhood with an open hand. It seemed as if he was spreading the light on her private parts.
You have to sleep with her afterwards to make it work, he then said.
If you ask me so.
The male smiled, then I will gladly comply with the request.
Ha!
That shouldn't be too hard for you, by my reckoning, the human laughed softly.
Lie back down with her.
She'll wake up in a minute.
I'll leave you guys alone for a while.
Have some fun together.
I'll look around the area a bit, he continued speaking.
Ephraim withdrew from the den to let the two animals finish his, and their, work, when Arya opened her eyes and asked, What's wrong?
Where is Ephraim?
He wants to look around the area a little bit. He said he probably wouldn't be back until the middle of the day. While that was a bit of a lie, it would definitely help because. So we'd be alone for quite a while, area.
I think I know what you mean. Would you like to go again?
She grinned.
Oh yes. Replied the fox with a certain eroticism in his voice.
It was so beautiful again yesterday.
Is it any wonder I can never get enough of you?
The animals began to give each other long and tender French kisses.
Aria stood up shortly after and turned her backside towards her husband to show him that she was ready for him. She turned her head slightly to the side and smiled sweetly at Aram.
Come, my strong male. She commanded, wiggling her butt stimulatingly.
When they finished their mating, they lay back down and talked lovingly to each other.
Aram.
Yes, honey. I feel it worked out this time.
We're going to have puppies, I just know it.
Well, sighed the fox, I hope so.
Be patient, it will come.
How many puppies do you think there could be?
I mean, if it worked this time.
What do your female instincts say?
Aria grinned, looking into your beautiful blue eyes like that. There couldn't be enough babies that you give me, eliciting a soft smile from her companion.
But now we should start organizing something to eat before it gets late, he suggested.
Aria nodded and said, I'll go look for Ephraim after the hunt. I'm sure he'll be hungry then, too.
All right, take care of yourself, sweetie.
You too, my heart.
After saying goodbye, they left their home and each went in a different direction. Half an eternity seemed to have passed, when the gentle she-wolf was about to give up the search for her human friend, but suddenly heard a loud cough. She followed the sound and sniffed the scent of Ephraim. Then she saw the man lying in a clearing and ran to him, calling his name over and over again.
Ephraim.
Oh no.
What happened?
She exclaimed when she was with him.
Her friend lay there covered in blood. His stomach was ripped open and most of his intestines were lying next to him. It was a borderline miracle that he was still alive.
Ephraim was breathing heavily and convulsive spasms all over his body made it difficult for him to speak. His injuries were fatal, the she-wolf realized immediately, but tried to convince him that everything would be all right.
Aria. Stuttered Ephraim.
No, don't speak.
She pleaded with tears in her eyes and began hastily licking the blood from his head as he gasped and rattled.
You found me.
A bear.
I just wanted.
Sorry.
Hush.
Everything will be all right, Ephraim.
I just have to get rid of the blood, then it will be all right, she said hastily and licked the human body frantically.
No, it will.
And?
I'm going away from you.
No.
Please don't go.
Do you hear me?
Aria pleaded and then called for help as loud as she could. But it was no use, the whole forest suddenly seemed to be swept clean, and to make matters worse, it first began to thunder and rain. The she-wolf cried and carefully pressed her forehead to the shoulder of the human, who stared into the treetops with a blank look. The first raindrops hit his face and he blinked, coughing out a lot of blood again and again.
Ephraim, we weren't there for you.
Oh please, don't die.
Suddenly, the outcast god seemed completely lucid and could speak normally again. He whispered at length, it's not your fault. I was careless and now I guess my brothers got what they wanted after all. I ran around with a boar skin, was stupid, because I was only a human being for a few days.
Again, Aria began to cry, I'm so sorry.
You don't have to, she got in reply.
I have done you good. But I couldn't have asked for more than to call you and Aram my friends.
All is well, believe me. I am becoming again what I once was. My last punishment should probably be the feeling I have now, I know what it's like.
To die.
A pause arose, during which Ephraim breathed more and more calmly, while the she-wolf whimpered.
He said calmly, take my hand, Aria.
I only have paws, after all.
I can't grab your hand.
Yes, you do, try to open a hand you don't have.
Do it, quickly.
The rain rushed loudly as the she-wolf lifted her right paw and tried to spread its toes to reach for the human's hand. She had never tried anything like this before, so she strained hard.
It hurts.
My whole body.
What's happening?
She shouted,
gritting her teeth. It felt like something was trying to tear her to pieces.
"Just try. You can do it," Ephraim shouted with a pain-distorted face, and his voice was almost choked by the loud thunder and the sound of the rain.
Aria squinted her eyes and screamed, while Ephraim began to speak something in a foreign language. It sounded like a prayer or a spell, but Aria could not hear it properly, let alone interpret it. Suddenly, the body of the female glowed with a bright light that completely surrounded her, and the pain disappeared. It tingled everywhere, and the female believed that its end had also come. Everything around her became so bright that she could only perceive outlines before she passed out and fell over. When Aria opened her eyes again, the storm was over, the sun was shining and the birds were chirping. The she-wolf raised her head and looked at the place where Ephraim had lain. He had disappeared and no more blood was to be seen. Had she been dreaming? Hadn't all that happened? Then how did she get here? She wanted to stand up to walk on her paws and realize that she had no paws at all. Aria was now kneeling and caught sight of human-like hands covered in fur. She turned them around, looked at her fingers, which she didn't even have before, spread them and started screaming in terror.
"Don't be afraid, Aria," a voice called, and the she-wolf was startled before she turned her head to the side and caught sight of a human.
"Ephraim? How is that possible? What happened to me? You were dead, weren't you?" But in fact, it was as if her human friend had not died at all. He was now standing right in front of her and smiling. He was dressed in a white robe and all his injuries were gone.
"As you can see, I'm not dead.
Well, not really. Let's just say I have shed my human shell and have been accepted back into the coven of the gods. All is well again, Aria." "But," the she-wolf began, "everything you experienced was real. I actually died. As I told you, the gods can no longer watch you and Aram. That's why I gave you, and all the other animals, for that matter, my last gift," Ephraim explained, pointing to Aria's changed body. She was still kneeling when Ephraim gave her his hand and helped her to stand up.
"See, you can stand. On two legs instead of four. And with those legs, you can walk, too."
"But why?" she asked, whereupon the man made the image of the she-wolf appear before her.
"Here, so you can look at yourself. You are really very beautiful, Aria. But I'm sure I don't need to tell you that."
Skeptically, she looked at her silver body and noticed that it had changed a lot. She still had a real wolf's head, a muzzle, wolf's nose, the typical wolf's teeth, and her brown eyes. But now she stood upright on her two rear paws, which still looked wolfish. Her front paws had turned into hands, and another big change was that instead of her teeth, she now had two mounds on the upper part of her body.
"What? Is that?"
she marveled.
"Well," Ephraim explained, "these are your breasts. Your husband will like them very much. Just as he will like your buttocks."
Now the god had to grin, while Aria turned around and her projection did the same. She caught sight of her long, bushy tail and her new butt. "So everyone is changed like that now. What about Aram? Where is he? Does he have boobs like this now too?"
"No," laughed Ephraim, "at least not that pronounced. After all, you have to nurse your puppies. Aram is in your den, sleeping. He knows nothing about all that has happened."
"What do you mean?"
"All he knows is that he and you, like the rest of your world, have always been like this. He's never met me, and for him, the last few days never happened. But he knows very well who you are. He knows he loves you and wants puppies from you. To him and to everyone else, your shape as it is now, is perfectly normal."
"What about me? Am I the only one who knows about you and what happened?" the she-wolf asked as the projection of her disappeared.
"Yes, and I want to ask you to keep it that way. You will quickly get used to your new body. You already know how to handle it, what you can do with it. Believe me, because I gave it to you as an instinct. I wanted to see you again and tell you what your future will be like, because now I can no longer intervene. The other gods don't have any power over Aram and you, but if I interfered, they would definitely know about it. While it's nice that you still want to say goodbye to me, I still don't understand why you changed us like that," Aria said, continuing to look at her body in fascination.
"It's quite simple. Now I'm going to give you some instructions on the way, things that I'd like you to keep to yourself, it's very important," ordered Ephraim, looking very serious.
The she-wolf nodded and said firmly, "Tell me then. You will have 7 puppies, which in turn will produce many descendants with others of their kind. The place where you and your husband Aram live will be the point of origin of your kingdom, which you shall call by your names, namely Aram Area. Your children and your children's children will one day speak a new language and establish a nation that will be almost entirely devoid of human greed and lust for power, for the wealth and possessions of the individual will not be important. All you and your husband will have to do is have sex. Nobody can influence your urges, the rest will develop by itself. You will develop, build cities, houses and machines. But what do you mean by these things? What are cities, houses, machines? What if we fail?" Arya doubted. "You won't. I cannot explain everything to you. Everything else is genetically given to you as of today. But if you want to know why all this, I can tell you that too, the people of Gaja are on the verge of having wasted all their resources. Their homeland is collapsing and when it does, they will eventually find this fertile and rich planet. After all, they are very resourceful, I'll give them that. They will one day in the distant future be able to travel and exploit the universe and not be afraid to take what they desire with all their aggression." "Humans? Gaja?" The she-wolf interrupted questioningly. "Yes, humans. They are very violent mammals. They all look like me, when you found me back then. They are rather useless and harmful, if you ask me. But they evolved from the creatures we once created on another planet called Gaja. When they come, you must be ready to stop them from robbing and destroying this beautiful world in the same way. That is why I have given you a body similar to theirs. I have opened all possibilities for you to be equal to them physically and psychologically. Your countenance is a cross between animal characteristics and those of humans. Even more, you are superior to them in many things. Each of the species on this planet is, in its own way, Ephraim explained further. That means we are supposed to fight? Fight to save this planet? Arya asked sadly. Well, you will not live to see all this. But it will happen in the distant future, the god confirmed. Yes, but then you gods make us your tools. She shouted angrily. How do you know we want what you are asking of us? Don't be angry, Arya. When the time comes, a generation far after, you will realize what the ultimate goal is. You are not fighting for us gods, but to survive. I and my brothers will help you when the time comes. Trust me, please, the god appeased. Yes, I trust you, Arya sighed. So the species of this planet can consider themselves lucky that you have chosen them all for something great? Something like that. But as I said, it will be your and Aram's sole purpose to live healthy and long and to take good care of your puppies. This is not to say that procreating pups should be your only purpose in life, but you will already feel a certain lust and love for each other that is necessary to fulfill your destiny and that of your world. Now Arya grinned and grabbed her breasts with both hands as she said, Yeah, if you say Aram likes these, it'll be fine. Well done. Praised Ephraim, but now I must take my leave. Enough of this meddling. Please remember, keep this information you now have all to yourself. At least until your descendants ask for your help. Otherwise, this planet will perish, as Gaja soon will. Humans will attack you and try to take everything away from you. Don't let it come to that. I don't understand some of what you're saying, but I promise you that no one will back down when the humans show up, Arya vowed confidently. I am very happy to hear that. I want to thank you again for helping me when I needed you. You are a strong she-wolf, made to lead, and Aram is a smart fox, born to steer. He is a great husband and father. Remember, I am with you and I love you. Now the she-wolf had tears in her eyes and took the god in human form in her arms. We will never forget you, Ephraim. He too now had moist eyes and said, See, that's another positive quality of this body, the ability to hug. The god felt the soft fur of the she-wolf one last time. Both cried as Ephraim slowly began to dissolve, finally turning to light until he disappeared. The continent of Aramaria, as an island country, was soon populated by many species of anthropomorphic animal beings, whose diversity increased visibly. Since the limited area could soon no longer accommodate all the colonies, they quarreled more often and more violently over the available living space. Their ideologies and beliefs differed, which is why a division of the land mass into estates remained impossible due to a lack of consensus. When the first ships left the coast,
bringing news of much more extensive lands beyond the eastern Great Sea, many hybrids set out for a new world. Banato, the only descendant of Aram and Arya, grew up to a strong male, which visually very strongly reminded of a wolf. His physique, his fur and his whole manner seemed to descend more from a wolf than from a fox. Aram raised him to be a hard-working man. Diligent, skillful and full of ideas, he did his best to be a good son to his parents and to provide them with a carefree life. Banato and his father built a modest house that enclosed the former cave. Arya was very proud of her son, although she also regretted that many attempts to conceive more children were unsuccessful. Aram also felt that Banato would remain their only child, but never spoke about it. One evening, the she-wolf lingered on the bench on the terrace of her newly completed house, gazing serenely at the stars, when Banato wordlessly sat down with her and did the same. Suddenly he broke through the chirping of the crickets, "Mother, why am I alone?" "What do you mean?" "You are not alone. You have us, my son." "I mean, why don't I have brothers and sisters? Didn't you and father want any more children?" Arya looked at him in wonder and gently stroked Banato's head. His questioning look did not change even when his mother lovingly scratched his ear. "You know, Banato, your father and I are a little too old for that now. After all, we had a long life together, even before the human god appeared before us. Father doesn't know this mysterious story, but you used to tell me about how this Ephraim once told you that you would have 7 puppies with your husband. Wasn't that true?" "Well," she sighed, 7 puppies I am to have, that's what Ephraim said. But he didn't say that they would all be Aram's." Banato looked thoughtfully at the planks of the wooden deck and caught sight of a beetle walking the plank, only to disappear into one of the crevices. "So if what he said is true, doesn't that mean that only father is the one who is too old and not you?" His mother looked up at the sky again and said that you can never know what the gods have in store for you. Her son, however, found this answer unsatisfactory and inquired, "What if that man meant you should be with other foxes? Let's not talk about it any further, my son. It's late, there is much to do tomorrow." The she-wolf waved off and went into the house after giving him a kiss on the forehead. Thoughtfully, the young man tried to find an answer himself, but kept running into new questions. What if what he thought was true? Should his mother look for a new companion so that the prophecy could be fulfilled? Would there be someone, then, to replace his father? The male dog now also went into the house and lay down in bed. With open eyes, he stared at the ceiling and let his thoughts circle, with abstruse visions of the future appearing before his mind, a foreign anthro who settled into a made nest, didn't really love Arya, and saw him, Banato, as a competitor. Aram, rejected by the family, aging, confused and frail. None of this was allowed to happen. No one would ever love his mother as he and his father did. Banato dreamed a short sequence in which he was standing at the dining table with one hand resting on it. The male raised it and left a bloody imprint. It stuck to his fingers and dripped like syrup from his fur to the floor. He looked around and walked slowly to the open front door, which, covered in blood, let in the sunlight. Fearfully he passed through them and saw a strange red mass lying in the grass, around which the flies were gathering. It must have been a dead fox, only recognizable by the fur marking on a torn apart muzzle. Cut up. Shredded. Gutted. Dead. His heart beat fast and the fear grew stronger. Who was this body and who had done this to him? Mother. Father. Where are you? Screamed Banato again and again, and was on the verge of tears when a soft voice urged him with quick words, "Go back inside. It's cold outside." Just as he was wondering what this was all about, after all, it was a warm summer day, the fox wolf noticed that the sky clouded over and it suddenly became bitterly cold. He shivered and his breath froze as he spotted more body parts scattered in the grass, one-eyed, slain skulls, severed legs and arms, disemboweled bodies and charred remains. More and more of them crossed his gaze and he quickly realized that they must be exclusively wolves. It stank of burnt flesh and the air tasted metallic. The world turned gray and first small, then larger and larger snowflakes began to cover the carcasses and body parts, when from somewhere a deep voice called out, "I never wanted to kill my friend Joliad, but I wanted to kill you and your kin, you bastard." Another, slightly higher voice, also unknown to Banato, seemed to reply, "You are a fucking butcher. What's going on here?
I want to wake up. Please.
Mother.
The fox-wolf hybrid pleaded, crying, and sank to the ground when suddenly someone lifted his head with a firm grip under his chin.
Yes, call for your mama.
Look, my friend. Look what the foxes have done. They have killed all our families. All because your parents conceived bastards. A young wolf spoke angrily, his lips tightened, and had drawn a small, blood-stained knife with a wide blade and a wooden handle. He wore clothes that were strange to Banato and shouted at him to get up and look at his crimes.
No. He whimpered, I didn't do anything.
Go away.
Yes, you did.
Amma, Enna, Jack, Joliad. You let them kill them all, and you're going to pay for it.
His counterpart growled, but the dreamer didn't understand.
What is Amma, Enna, Jack, Joliad? What do these words mean?
Sniffed Banato, suddenly feeling a headache that grew stronger and stronger, hearing a whistling sound so shrill and high-pitched that he covered his ears screaming in pain and then found himself tossing and turning in his bed. From that day on, the young hybrid was never the same. He always had a headache, spoke little, was always bad-tempered and had a hatred for everything and everyone inside him. His parents tried to talk to him, but Banato, in pain, always told them to mind their own business. The dream he once had contained a message that he thought he understood more and more. All the dead wolves must have been murdered by foxes. After all, this was also the opinion of the stranger who had approached him there. The murderers were probably descendants of Aram and Arya, which must mean that another pregnancy of his mother could be possible. So, if she had more puppies from Aram, they could carry a higher percentage of fox in them and might be responsible for this genocide at some point. The young male was sure that what he had experienced must be a vision of a cruel future, even if he could not explain why it was a strange wolf who had told him all this. The headaches and the constant whistling in his ears became a continuous torment that even skilled healers could not remedy, causing Banato to visibly lose his mind over the years. His dream soon returned every night, so he decided to put an end to it and change the supposed future. One day Aram and his son went into the forest to saw logs. Arya wanted to accompany them to gather herbs, but her son waved her off. He said she should rather stay at home and could go collecting later. Although the mother looked puzzled, she didn't ask any further questions and agreed. The males marched for a while and began the work they had planned, when Arya, who was at home preparing dinner, had an uneasy feeling creep over her. Something seemed to be wrong. Banato had changed over the last few years, had become so aggressive, dismissive. Why didn't he talk about what was bothering him? She sighed. What mysterious illness did her son have? Would there be help in the near future? While preparing dinner, she noticed that her husband had forgotten the drinking water and set out to bring it to her boys. On the way, the sky clouded over and a strange silence spread, although wind was blowing. Everything seemed dull and unreal and it became noticeably cooler. The sun had disappeared and was covered by ominously dark clouds. When she reached the edge of the forest, Arya was startled, for she could suddenly see her breath and a dense fog shrouded the trees. All-encompassing gray. Desolate and sad. Impenetrable and opaque. Cold and wet. What's going on here? She asked herself, pacing further and calling for Aram and her son. No one answered, which made the situation even more sinister. It is summer after all, she spoke in amazement as she stood among the massive trees and a snowflake fell on her nose. That's not possible. After more calls went unanswered and the she-wolf became very worried, her son's voice suddenly spoke behind her, Hello, mother. Arya was violently frightened and thought her heart would stop. Banato. You scared me. She exclaimed, realizing that her son's right arm was covered in blood. A look of wide open, empty eyes stared at her and Banato grinned grimly as he hissed with quick words, Get back inside. It's cold outside. Now his mother feared the worst, asking, What? Where is your father, Banato? What happened? My headache is gone, mother, was the only reply she got as the male turned away from her again and strolled further into the forest. The snowfall was now very dense and his mother almost lost sight of him, but she quickly went after him, her heart pounding and fearing that there must have been an accident. A few meters further on, they were standing in front of a large deciduous tree that bore peach-like fruit. Hanging from its branches was the body of a fox, cut open lengthwise and drenched in blood, hanging its head and staring directly into the eyes of the she-wolf with its snout open.
In front of him, on the forest floor, lay his entrails and the snow around it was colored deep red. The she-wolf recognized immediately, the fox there was Aram, her husband, and Banato had killed him. Immediately she started screaming and dropped to her knees. She cried, catching her breath again and again, and continued the cry until she let her head sink into the snow and why, Banato? Why? She whimpered. But her son was unimpressed and wiped the numerous snowflakes from his muzzle. It's not cold anymore, mother. The whistling sound is gone, no more pain. Arya was devastated and it took her a moment to stand up and walk hatefully towards the killer. Why did you do this? You murderer. She screamed and was intercepted by her son's arms, from which she tried to free herself, punching and kicking. As if in a psychosis, the male dog answered doggedly and strained, I will not let him continue to turn wolves into foxes. I will take his place as his son. Before Arya understood what was happening and what it was all about, Banato tore the clothes off her body and threw himself on top of her lying in the snow. For several years he raped his mother again and again and was disappointed that she did not give birth to pups as wolfish as he was. There were 6 foxes that later turned against their mother's tormentor and drove him away. Arya forbade them to kill Banato. He should rather live in exile at the outer east of the continent. The fox did not have the heart to give the order to kill, let alone ever harm a living being. Why Banato had done what he did, he never revealed. His hatred for his father, which seemed to have arisen all of a sudden, also remained a mystery to the she-wolf throughout her life. Her son had fallen ill at some point. The she-wolf and her remaining children left it at that and never heard of Aram's murderer again. The broken she-wolf spent her last years advising her already grown children. Eventually, each of them was to claim their own part of her great continent Aramaria and lead it into the future. When her children carried her to the grave, they buried her next to her husband. The gravestones of their parents were adorned with the symbols of the pet names they had once given each other, my son fox, my moon wolf.